In this edition of the Week in Review, we will discuss the violence in Milwaukee on Saturday and all the issues raised, the politics involved in the flooding in Louisiana, should President Obama cut his vacation short to visit Baton Rouge, plus other top stories in state and national politics. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. What issue from the news this week would you like to discuss? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Scott Ross is with us. He is the executive director of One Wisconsin Now. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Steve Prestigard is with us. He is a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. It's the first weekend of high school football. I hope your forecast doesn't become correct until after midnight, because then there will be a lot of people sitting in the rain across the state trying to avoid the lightning, because, you know, they can play in the rain, they can't play in the lightning.
Oh, yeah, it's
until after midnight.
It's been pouring out in Madison this morning so far, so it's not going to wait until after midnight anyway.
No, absolutely. Thank goodness this is radio, because my hair is just a mess.
But yeah, Friday night football, it's already starting. Isn't that something? And you know what? We'll talk a little bit also about the Olympics later on in the show, speaking of sports. But let's start off with probably the biggest story of the week, certainly in Wisconsin and even nationally. And get your general thoughts on what happened in Milwaukee on Saturday. Violence broke out following a fatal police shooting of a man in Milwaukee's Sherman Park neighborhood. Scott Ross, you first. What did you make of what happened and the reaction?
Well, obviously, you know, violence is always a sad thing to see. But I think you can also see a lot of frustration in the way that communities of color feel that they're being treated, not only by the government, but a lot of times by police. And I don't think that we have done a good enough job to address legitimate concerns that people have in urban centers around not just Wisconsin, but around the country, in terms of dealing what people feel, and I think sometimes legitimately so, that there's disparity in the way that whites are treated by some police officers and the way that African Americans are treated by some police officers.
And your general thoughts, Steve?
I think that it is, I mean, Scott's right, it is sad, very sad. I feel particularly for the people, first off, the people who, you know, are trying to improve things in that neighborhood, business owners and, you know, people who don't habitually get arrested for things in that neighborhood and other parts of inner city Milwaukee. I think that, however, that you're not ever going to make your point across by about, and there are legitimate issues to be brought up with, you know, what gets enforced and doesn't, and so on with police, but you're never going to get that across by looting and throwing bricks at firefighters and shooting at police officers, which was reportedly the case. One of the interesting things I thought that I saw in reporting was the police chief's claim that a group of, agitators would be the best way to put it, from Chicago came up to Milwaukee for the express purpose of starting mayhem, basically. And my source, by the way, is not one of those crazy right-wing websites. It's the Chicago Tribune. They quoted Ed Flynn as saying that some group called the Revolutionary Communist Party apparently arrived up there about 11:30 Saturday night, and they were starting to organize people to loot and so on. And, you know, of course, what people end up getting hurt worst by that, it is the people who are trying to live in that neighborhood, own houses, and have, you know, an actual life. Those are the people, business owners included, that I feel most sorry for with all of this.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I mean, yeah, I heard the exact same report that that Steve must have heard about communists coming from Milwaukee. And, you know, My eyes rolled when I heard that, because I think that that's, you know, unfortunate. But let's not, you know, kid ourselves. The people of Milwaukee, and certainly African Americans in Milwaukee, have a right to be very concerned about what is going on with their community. I mean, you know, Wisconsin was rated the worst state for Black Americans. Showed that Wisconsin leads the nation of incarceration of African Americans, and that Milwaukee County, half of all American males in their 30s and 40s have served time in state prison. And we have seen a rash of two things happen. First is that resources that need to go into our cities are being taken away from cities, whether it's economic development funds, whether it's funds in terms of education, whether it's funds for health care. Those are being stripped away, certainly by this current administration, for the last 5 years, to give out tax breaks to rich people and corporations that have not created jobs in the inner cities. And secondly, that we have seen over, you know, in the go-go 90s, in terms of tough on crime, we saw Governor Walker author a truth in sentencing bill that created longer sentences for people. And when you have disparities in who is sent to prison, and there is very clear, it is incontrovertible, that given our population of African Americans, that the fact that we have a majority African American population in state prison shows that there is a racism in the system. And truth in sentencing, which had support of Democrats too, was something that created more people being taken away from their families and incarcerated in places outside of Milwaukee, making that economic hardship even more acute.
Let's talk a little bit about the body cam. The officer's body camera has been viewed by the police chief and some others. It's currently with the DOJ, the Department of Justice, which is investigating. The police chief said that he saw the tape and that it was a justified shooting. However, the man that was shot and killed, Seville Smith, according to the police chief in the body cam, had a gun, is what the police chief is saying. However, the body cam footage has not been released, and Mayor Tom Barrett is calling on the Department of Justice to release the video so people can see for themselves what happened when Smith was killed. The DOJ, though, says it won't release it until the investigation is complete. Steve Prescott, do you want to see this video come out now?
Do I want to see the video? Sure, I do. I mean, as somebody in the news media, absolutely I want to see it. I don't think it needs to come out this second. It is not usual for police to release, or, you know, any law enforcement to release stuff like that. When I say stuff like that, that means evidence in a potential criminal case. If the police officer did not follow department procedures and did something wrong, well, he could conceivably be criminally charged. And the law enforcement and the criminal justice system doesn't usually release evidence until, a trial takes place. I think it absolutely should be shown when the investigation is completed. And then people, you know, ultimately, cynical me says that there will be some people who claim that the officer was not justified, even if the video shows that he was. People will have to make their own minds up on it, but I think it is perfectly fine to wait until the investigation is done. And I have to think that this is probably priority number one in the Justice Department to get this thing finished so they don't have to deal with it anymore. I think it can wait a couple of weeks to show, you know, but absolutely that ought to be shown.
Scott?
Well, I think that, you know, Mayor Barrett has said he wants it released. I think that what you saw, you know, just look again, we were referencing Chicago earlier. When video was denied, I mean, the Emanuel administration, again, a Democrat, withheld that video, allowed that video to be withheld for almost a year, that when it finally came out in the shooting down there, that there was, you know, that the massive uprisings had a lot to do with people feeling like they had been lied to, and that the truth had been prevented, it was prevented from coming out. And I think that's just, you know, I think more information, you know, we should absolutely gather all the information that we can gather. I know that the Department of Justice just put out, like, I guess, an anonymous tip line, which seems a little odd for something like this, but they just announced that they are going to have a tip line if you want to do a do tips about that. But I think we should also remember that, you know, when it comes to actual public policy to do things, we have a governor and a state legislature who eliminated the reporting requirement for law enforcement that would have allowed the collection of details about potential racial profiling. We know that the State Department of Justice was underfunded in terms of providing resources for review of independent review of police-involved shootings. And I think those public policies things are really, really important. I also love the fact that we're on a radio station right now that's broadcasting all over the state of Wisconsin, including in the city of Milwaukee. And there has been no more, I think, insidious agitator of racism than right-wing talk radio that goes on in Milwaukee. And I don't think there's anybody who can listen to the broadcast down there that were embodied in the fact that Donald Trump, when he came to talk about Milwaukee and chastise Milwaukee's Democratic leaders about the violence that he did in West Bend that has 1.6% African-American population instead of the city of Milwaukee, which is a minority-majority city.
I'm going to get to that in a moment, but Scott, are you, when you're bringing up all these different policies, are you saying that you think that Governor Walker and the Republican legislature's policies have contributed to, maybe even led to, the conditions that led to the violence?
I would say this. That Governor Walker has represented Milwaukee in some shape or form for 24 years. He was an assemblyman from Wauwatosa for 9 years. He was the county executive of Milwaukee County for 8 years, and he has been the governor of our state for 5 years. He absolutely has responsibility for this, in part because, like no other politician in our state's history, Governor Walker has utilized racial animus in order to gain political advantage, and I think it's embodied in his public policies over and over and over we see. And just look, for instance, with the voter ID case. You know, a little selfless, shameless self-promotion. One Wisconsin Institute sued Governor Walker over voter ID and all the attacks on voter rights. And the judge specifically said that Governor Walker and the Republican legislature was specifically trying to deny, quote, Milwaukee's African Americans from voting. I mean, that is disenfranchisement goes back to the nation's earliest sin of denying people's humanity through slavery. And Governor Walker has been a part of this 21st century version of Jim Crow.
What's your response to that, Steve?
Where do you want me to start?
Well, do you think that Governor Walker's policies have not hurt Milwaukee?
Well, I would point this out. You know, he has been remarkably successful in getting elected from the state legislature to becoming the county executive in a very Democratic county, to getting elected 3 times in the state to be the governor. To say that Scott Walker specifically has created all of these conditions that inner city Milwaukee faces kind of misses the fact that there have been Democratic or liberal or even socialist mayors of Milwaukee for more than 100 years, and their conditions haven't gotten any better. That great Democrat Daniel Patrick Moynihan wrote in the 1960s about the problems facing the black family, and so it's been going on far longer than Scott Walker's political career. I think that instead of complaining about, you know, there some things where there may be a point as far as what Scott is talking about, it would be much more helpful to focus on this specific case and only this specific case until it's completed. And when you're doing that, you have to remember that Philville Smith has an alarmingly long criminal record dating back to his juvenile days. And then he, you know, had a stolen gun, and he ran from the police, and he apparently had the gun in his hand. This is what's alleged, at any rate. And, that is what the important thing is here, is to as Wallace. And by the way, when you talk about all of these conditions that Scott Walker is supposedly responsible for, I'm not sure that he caused Philville Smith's criminal career or anybody else's. Mm-hmm. And you know, of course, who the people are who suffer the most. It's not the rich people in the Milwaukee suburbs. It is the people who have to live in those neighborhoods, in the Sherman Park neighborhood, who, you know, again, are trying to raise families to stay out of trouble and to accomplish something in their lives. And then you have thugs like Sylville Smith, and I say this before what he did Saturday night, running around and making things worse for everybody.
Let me, because we have a break coming up, Scott, can you want to address the point which a lot of Republicans have pointed to, is that Milwaukee has been under Democratic leadership, the city anyway, forever?
Well, I'd say two things. One is that none of the things that Sylville Smith did are crimes that are punishable by execution. And so whenever I hear people say, oh, this person had a record of things, that is to somehow justify. I don't feel that Steve did that, but I think we're moving into that territory. The second thing I did, and Steve can think about this during the break perhaps, come back with me with three things that Governor Walker in his 24 years in elected office in Milwaukee, representing Milwaukee in some way, shape, or form, has done for African Americans. Give me three, or two, or I'd even ask for one.
Do you think that the Democratic mayors of Milwaukee didn't have a responsibility to do anything to help African-Americans?
I absolutely do, but the Democratic mayors aren't the ones who starve Milwaukee of public funds, whether it's transportation funds, whether it's education funds. The mayors of Milwaukee did not deny African-Americans the ability to vote in elections because they don't want them to vote. That all happened otherwise.
Break time, and then we will continue talking about some of the issues raised by the violence that occurred in Milwaukee on the weekend, including Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump coming to Milwaukee and West Bend on Tuesday. And much more. What would you like to talk about? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking, as we always do on Fridays, with two guests from different political viewpoints, and we are welcoming your thoughts and questions about the news of the week. We are talking with Scott Ross, who is the executive director of One Wisconsin Now, and Steve Prestigard, who is a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. Right now, we're talking about the what happened in Milwaukee and the fallout all week long, and welcoming your thoughts and questions about that, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, let's talk a little bit about Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump coming to Wisconsin on Tuesday. He stopped in Milwaukee, gave a speech in West Bend. The visits were scheduled before the violence occurred on the weekend. He said, as president, he would work to restore law and order, especially in African-American communities, which would involve more police on the streets. Steve Prestigard, was that the right message to give in West Bend?
I would say it is for his voters, which is a group that does not include myself. I think that, I did not see the speech, but from what I read, he gave apparently a pretty good speech because, somewhat remarkably for him, he actually stuck to the script and didn't go off on the tangents that no one can explain. Since I'm not a Trump supporter, I'd love to see him take that speech to Sherman Park and see what the reaction is. I think the chances of that happening are about as good as myself being elected president this year. But I absolutely want to see that. It would be helpful for Trump to be able to, I mean, he talked about law and order. I don't think, believe it or not, that is an issue that only is interesting to whites, but I'd like to see him take that to a non-natural Democratic audience. And by the way, and again, I repeat, I am not voting for Trump, but I think somebody told him to take a tack from the 1968 presidential race when, you'll recall, Richard Nixon became the law and order candidate and he got elected president. I don't think that's going to happen, but for those people who think that we're watching 1968 all over again, I think you see some evidence right there.
Scott?
Well, I'm going to push my glasses up from the bridge of, or down the bridge of my nose to look professorial and say, I don't think this is an election about 1968. I think it's more 1964 with Barry Goldwater and just sort of the radical extremism that's coming out of the maw of Donald Trump's mouth, whether it's his impromptu speeches or whether it's this written speech. What I think is so incredibly interesting is that if you listen to some of the cable news shows, you know, hosts are just desperate for Donald Trump to pivot and to be on message and to do all these things. You know, who are you going to believe? The guy who's been talking for the last 13 months or whatever he says in the last, 82 days of this election? And I think the fact that while this was all going on, while Donald Trump was delivering his lines to a teleprompter, which is only bad if a Democrat does it, right? When he was delivering his lines in West Bend, which has a 1.6% African-American population, he was literally negotiating the hire to run his campaign of the head of Breitbart website, who is an avowed racist and avowed anti-Semite. If you see his writings, if you see the things that are coming out about people who used to work for him and the ways in which that he speaks about people of color, it's no different than Donald Trump does, except for some of the things Donald Trump probably says, this guy said publicly.
Let me get back to that campaign shakeup in just a moment and get Steve to respond to that. But Sheree in Waupun has been waiting. Hi, Sheree.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call this morning. I just want to say, right off the bat, I'm a black woman that lives here in Wisconsin, and I did watch the Donald Trump speech, and I was absolutely floored. I felt like, first of all, even though I think he thought he was talking to me, he was not talking to me, because I have knowledge about his past discriminatory practices. He's been sued by the Department of Justice twice for denying or trying not to have blacks in his buildings, giving them different prices, saying apartments weren't available when they were. You know, having the guy from Breitbart, head up his campaign, and then try to tell me, but I want to help you too. I honestly, I could not snap my neck around fast enough. It was so insulting. And I thought to myself, I couldn't believe he started off with, doing away with the dog whistle and just, saying what some people want to say. And then to turn around and try to tell me, but I'll help you too. I don't think he thought he was talking to me. I think he thought that if he said that other Republicans who view him as racist may come over to his side now, because I don't think he was really talking to me.
Well, let me ask you, Sheree, Trump did in that speech accuse Hillary Clinton of bigotry and pandering to African Americans and talking down to black people and seeing them only as votes. He was making an appeal for the African American vote, apparently, and saying that Democratic policies have not helped African Americans. What was your reaction to that?
This is what I would say to that. I understand how some people think Democratic rule hasn't necessarily been beneficial, but I will say that as long as I've seen Hillary and Bill in office, they've always been surrounded by different people of color. And that's important to me, even from 20 years back, because to me it shows that there's a trust and a level built with certain people that's not as much of an issue. And when I look at Donald Trump and I hear the things he said, the very first thing that he said was, Mexicans, they're not seeing us their best, Mexicans are rapists. It seems like he was quite happy to delineate us all together and just say, hey, you're this and you're that and you're that. And when I see Hillary and Bill, even though I don't necessarily agree with all of their practices and everything that they've done, I've really felt they have more of an inclusiveness to their organization that does not exist in the Donald Trump organization.
Thank you very much, Sheree, for your perspective. Steve, get your reaction to a Trump appealing to black voters and what he had to say.
Well, let's remember first the first rule about Donald Trump, which is that his position on any particular issue is whatever he has most recently said. I mean, we could take up the rest of this show talking about the flip-flops that he's had over the years. But obviously, either his people haven't thought it out real well or he hasn't thought it out real well. If he really intends to vote or intends to get non-white voters to vote for him, he's not even know, he doesn't have anything beyond here, vote for me. I think of Republicans like Jack Kemp, for instance, who fought hard to create opportunities in inner cities, and there are Republicans like that, and, you know, there need to be more Republicans like that. It's kind of interesting in a sense because, you know, Trump with his business background should be able to talk in a more clear fashion, if that's even possible in his case, you know, about how you create opportunity in these areas that are that have high unemployment and have bad schools and have high crime and all of the problems that we're seeing in the inner cities in this country, because he has businesses supposedly in those areas, but he apparently hasn't really thought the whole issue through, which is far from surprising.
What, Steve, what is your reaction to the campaign's shakeup and putting the Breitbart.com director in charge of his campaign?
Well, if you're interested in a really nasty campaign, then this is exactly what you want to do. You know, those of us who read Breitbart before he died, and I'll look at it now, are frankly quite appalled by what's happened since, you know, since his death. I'm sure Scott didn't like Breitbart before or after this, but, you know, as the days go by, Breitbart loses more and more credibility among its core audience. And, you know, as I said, if you think the campaign has been nasty up to this point, just you wait.
Yeah. You know, speaking of some of the media issues here, the officer who shot and killed Sylville Smith is now reportedly receiving death threats. His photo and even his home address is being circulated on Facebook, generating some very nasty comments about killing him. Shoot him in the head is one comment. Police Chief Ed Flynn says the officer is on administrative leave, is staying with relatives out of town. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel actually released the officer's name, which upset some of its readers, but defended its decision, saying his identity was already widely known and readily available. Steve, as a journalist type, what do you think of the paper's decision to release the officer's name?
Those are public records. They should be public records. I question the judgment of doing it right now, for exactly what has happened. Although they're claiming, I find this really interesting that apparently the police department didn't have a problem with releasing his name, and I'm sure that was a lot of their justification. As I said, those should be public records. Police functions are part of government, and government needs to be out in the open. I don't know that I would have done that. And the implications of doing that as something happening to the officer or his family are huge. And I certainly think that they ought to be holding their breath at 333 West State Street that nothing happens to that officer.
Mm-hmm. Scott?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. I mean, I read George Stanley, the editor of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's, his column about this, defending his decision, and I thought it was a reasonable defense of their decision. You know, the problem with social media is that it allows people to express the stupidity publicly that they should probably keep to themselves, and obviously the comments that Joy was talking about were absolutely in that thing and likely illegal. Thank you, Steve, for the beginning of that when we were talking about Trump and you talked about his next position. His position is whatever he just said, because we have always noted that intellectual consistency is the hobgoblin of the small-minded, and I think your comment proved that for sure when it comes to Trump. But yeah, I think one thing that we're forgetting about this discussion related to Milwaukee and violence in our cities is that this is an issue. So much of this is an issue of poverty, and the fact is that if you put a ton of poor white people together in a place where they're being denied assistance, where they're having to, you know, urinate in cups as though they're drug offenders in order to get public benefits, things like that, that have been put into law, you would have violence in these, you know, rural meccas of lots of people. When you have a lot of people in poverty, you're going to have challenges. What we need to do is we need to address the systemic problems of poverty. That will help us deal better with the issues that relate, that rise up from crime, in my opinion. But I'm talking as a white guy from Madison.
Let's bring in David from Cedarburg. Hi, David.
Hey, how are you? Where do I begin? Good Lord. I'll stick to the topic that I said that I was going to talk about. This is a jobs issue, okay? And as you just said, as your guest just said, this is a poverty issue. But the poverty is in Milwaukee because both parties have bought into the a free trade agreements, NAFTA, whatnot, China and the WTO. China's a kleptocracy, okay? They cheat on everything that they touch. They deflate their currency.
I'm afraid we can't go into great detail about what China's doing, but I get the you think that the trade deals have been bad for jobs in Milwaukee and elsewhere. Steve, what do you think about that?
Well, I assume that Donald Trump probably agrees with the caller. I don't agree with Trump. And Hillary Clinton, I don't think, agrees with the caller either. The benefits of free trade have been pretty obviously denoted for decades, particularly in the state of Wisconsin for agriculture. Exports continue to grow in this state, and one of the reasons that I absolutely cannot fathom Republican support for Donald Trump is the fact that his position on trade would absolutely devastate agriculture in the state of Wisconsin, which is very dependent on exports. And for the life of me, I don't understand why Republicans support that. I would like to see Trump explain how it is that what he wants to do with that, you know, based on his business background, and I guess we better not mention the bankruptcies, part of that, but how he would improve the inner city, specifically the inner city economy. These are issues that have not just taken place in the last decade or two decades. That, again, it goes a long way back in the case of the economic problems of the inner city in this country. And, you know, you hear Hillary Clinton, she really is not suggesting anything different than what has attempted to happen in the last few years. I want to hear what Trump has to say. And, you know, again, if there's actually any intellectual depth in there, or if he is, in fact, you know, the small mind that Scott mentions.
You know, I wanted to get in one other issue. Hillary Clinton said on Monday that the Milwaukee riot showed that America has urgent work to do to rebuild trust between police and communities. Governor Walker took her to task the next day, saying she was inflaming the situation and trying to imply that Milwaukee police did something wrong. Is there anything wrong with the statement that urgent work needs to be done to rebuild trust between police and communities, Steve?
Well, as far as it goes, I suppose not. However, I would point out that what Walker said was basically the same thing that Tom Barrett and Ed Flynn were saying. And it's not clear to me that Hillary really helped anything by saying what she did. Being a cynic, I assume she's going to be elected president in November. And, after 8 years of no progress on that issue under Barack Obama, I guess it's going to be her problem coming up in January.
Scott, you're looking bewildered.
I think that what we saw from Governor Walker is what we saw from Governor Walker, which is he will use every opportunity to inject politics into a serious discussion. And going after Hillary Clinton for saying what was a very reasonable statement is I think, you know, it was unfortunate even by Governor Walker's standards. But again, if we were talking about what Governor Walker has done to Wisconsin African Americans or what he hasn't done for African Americans for his last 24 years in office, that would be a discussion that he doesn't want to do. Scott Walker understands a couple things. One, that campaigns are about dividing people. He forgets that governance should be about bringing them together. And he understands the notion, attack, never defend.
You know, he did say this week that Donald Trump could still win Wisconsin, even though he's double digits behind in the latest polls, by going after Hillary Clinton. What do you think, Scott?
I think we better check what's in those hot ham and rolls he tweets about so often.
Does he really?
The reason I'm saying that is because he made a comment about somebody that weed is legal in D.C. and I forget what it was. Maybe Steve remembers, but it was just yesterday. He made a like offhanded but kind of funny joke, so I was stealing his joke.
So you think that it's a joke to say that?
I think it's ridiculous to think that Donald Trump is going to be the one who breaks the. What, it's been since the last time Republicans have won the Electoral College was 1984. They also haven't won a U.S. Senate race held in a presidential election year since 1980. So Ron Johnson's swimming upstream as well. And Donald Trump can't be helping him, given that Ron Johnson sort of goes all over the place in the same way that Paul Ryan does about where he's at on things.
Well, certainly Donald Trump, is and Pence are coming to Wisconsin a lot, thinking that maybe it's not a lost cause. Steve, do you think that? Do you agree with the governor that if Trump would go after Hillary Clinton, he might win Wisconsin?
No, the facts are facts, and the fact is that since 1988. A majority of voters in this state have not voted for a Republican. In fact, I think that spending any money at all on the presidential race in the state of Wisconsin is wasted money on the part of the Republicans. Their thing needs to be to do what they can to help Ron Johnson. There is one probably toss-up congressional race. That's Reed Ribble's seat, the 8th District, that is that Ribble is leaving. And, I think it's very unlikely that the Democrats will flip the legislature. But, history is history, and facts are facts. And Ronald Reagan was the last Republican to win this state. And for that specific reason, you can ask why that is, but for that specific reason, I think Trump is wasting his time in this state.
We have to take our break. And when we come back, we'll talk. We're going to talk about Louisiana a little bit and the political debate ensuing over President Obama being on vacation. Should he cut his vacation short and visit Louisiana? Donald Trump is on his way to Louisiana today. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in state and national politics. We are talking today with Steve Prestigard, who's a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com, and Scott Ross, the executive director of One Wisconsin Now. And as promoted, let's talk about Louisiana. Critics of President Obama are lining up. And criticizing him for not cutting short his vacation to visit the flood-ravaged area of Louisiana, which the Red Cross says is the worst national disaster since Hurricane Sandy in the United States. Obama receives regular briefings. He declared the area a federal disaster area. He did send Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson to the region. But even a Baton Rouge newspaper editorialized and said, President Obama, we need you. Cut your vacation short. All right. You first, Scott Ross. Is the president, did he make a big mistake by not going to Louisiana?
I was kind of on the fence about that because I had started hearing, people grumbling about it yesterday on the interwebs. And then last night I saw an interview with the governor of Louisiana. And he said, we are getting everything that we need from the federal government. President doesn't need to come here. If he does, it'll be great. But he doesn't need to come here. And he also, I think the thing is, when a president comes to a place, there is an enormous production that goes on with that. All the security, all the stuff that goes on. And they're still trying to get people the aid that they need. So I understand why people would say it, and certainly on the right, nobody an opportunity to take shots at President Obama, who's taken about, 220 days of vacation compared to nearly 900 for George Bush. They're never going to pass up an opportunity to take a shot at Obama. But I would take the governor of Louisiana, who, when he ran for election, did not embrace Barack Obama in any way, shape, or form during his campaign. I'll take him at his word that he feels that the federal government is doing its job and that Barack Obama is doing its job when it comes to helping the people of Louisiana.
Of course, President Bush was heavily criticized for merely flying over the damage left behind by Hurricane Katrina in 2005. I think he was also on vacation. Donald Trump and his running mate Mike Pence have announced that they are planning to visit Louisiana today. So what are your thoughts on this, Steve?
Well, if it was fair to attack Bush a decade ago, it's fair to attack Obama now. Honestly, I don't particularly find it. There's a whole lot more things to criticize Obama about than this. Although, if you think about it, wouldn't it be interesting to see Obama and apparently next week Trump and Pence actually, you know, doing something useful like, I don't know, filling sandbags or distributing food to people who are flooded out of their homes or anything like that? Generally, if the politicians show up, they're not being very helpful. And so I don't. As I said, there are numerous things to criticize Obama about. I think it's kind of interesting also that the Louisiana governor felt the need to jump to his defense. Apparently, from what I read, and I hope it's accurate, so I'm not speaking out of turn here, but from what I read, in order to get FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, into your state, the governor has to request them. And I find it interesting that that the governor of Louisiana, apparently there's some question as to how quickly he jumped up on that, but politicians show up at disaster areas and they never ever help, so he's fine to leave, to not be there. But again, don't you want to see Trump and Pence, you know, on sandbag patrol or, you know, doing something actually useful instead of just making media?
I'm going to look it up, but there actually was somebody. I thought it was somebody in authority said, hey, Donald Trump, if you're going to come here, we want you to volunteer. We don't want you to just have a photo op.
Yeah, I guess Trump is too low energy, huh, Steve, to be able to sandbag. I would take just a little umbrage with what Steve said in sort of comparing Hurricane Katrina to this flood, because people were dying in the Superdome and the federal government was really doing nothing. And so I think that's a tough comparison to make. I think I understand why you'd make it, but I don't think that it's necessarily a fair one. Just in the interest of full honesty.
Yeah, I guess it was Louisiana Governor John Edwards who said that he didn't want Donald Trump just using this as a photo op.
Yeah, but John Bell L. Edwards, you don't want to get in trouble.
Oh,
if you have
sorry.
Any Louisiana listeners, they'll be very unhappy
okay,
if you don't
sorry.
Include the Bell.
Bell. Gordon in Wisconsin Rapids is with us. Hi, Gordon.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Yeah, I definitely think Obama should go down to Katrina or go down to Louisiana. You know, how much golfing can one guy do in two terms in office?
What about him taking less vacation than Bush, Gordon?
Yeah, no kidding. Some of this campaign money could go to helping real people in real cities.
Well, Gordon seems to think that the president golfs too much. There is that impression, Scott, but you're saying that that's not true.
I think Steve will say that's liberal media. I'll say it's conservative media. I would say that Republicans and conservatives do a better job of keeping long-term outrage about things in the news to create these sort of themes, and Obama golfing is one of them. Listen, my grandfather was a greenskeeper, but I've never golfed a day in my life, so I'm sort of in both camps on this. I don't think that what the president has done in terms of his vacation over the last 8 years has been unreasonable, but I also am not a big fan of golfing.
This is a heavy-duty topic to take up right now, but we're going to anyway. Hillary Clinton and Vice President Joe Biden both said that Donald Trump could not be trusted with the country's nuclear launch codes. Senator Ron Johnson was asked about that in Wausau this week, and he said that Trump certainly can be trusted with the nuclear codes. Your reaction to that, Scott Ross?
Yeah, I mean, I think that... Listen, I think that if you want to see what a Donald Trump presidency would be like, watch the movie The Dead Zone with I'm glad you know that movie, Steve. You know what I'm talking about. But I don't want to do any spoiler alerts, even though it's a 33-year-old movie. But anyhow, I think that what came out of that, I think that it's a very reasonable thing, given Donald Trump's temperament, that people who actually have been in that sort of position, like the vice president would say, I don't think he has the temperament to be able to get the nuclear codes. I think that Ron Johnson, on the other hand, has done himself a great disservice because he just looks like he's all over the place when it comes to Trump. But in the end, he's still supporting him. But I think that's a thing that we've seen with Ron Johnson, you know, whether it's, you know, I mean, we've certainly talked about it at One Wisconsin Institute, his unwillingness to help appoint justices to the courts and stuff like that. I mean, I think that he's the one who has the most to lose by this continuing conversation about Donald Trump's unfitness for office.
Yeah, so
here in Wisconsin.
Did Ron Johnson make a mistake by saying that, Steve?
Well, I think every Republican who has supported Donald Trump has made a mistake by supporting Donald Trump. So by extension, yes. When Scott mentioned a movie, I really thought he was going to talk about Dr. Strangelove, but, you know, to each his own, I guess, as far as movies go. But I think the person, and nobody's brought it up at this point, but I think the person that Republicans ought to be paying a whole lot more attention to than whatever Donald Trump has to say is the independent running Evan McMullen, who actually knows something about terrorism because that's one of the things he was responsible for with the CIA. And he's running an independent campaign. He is starting to get on ballots. You know, as I said, I'm not voting for Trump or Hillary. I'm not voting probably for Gary Johnson either. He's the guy I'm more interested in. I guess the other thing I'd point out real quick is that the people said the same thing about Ronald Reagan in 1980. And I was a student on the UW-Madison campus when people were absolutely convinced that somehow Reagan forgot to blow up the planet in his first term, but he would certainly do it in his second term. And I noticed we're still here. So, you know, for those who are concerned about Trump, just remember that that's not, you know, past history didn't really pan out the kind of hysterical predictions of the 80s.
Here's one that we didn't expect we would talk about, but since there was a news update this morning, U.S. Olympic swimmer Ryan Lochte said he and his teammates were robbed at gunpoint while in Rio. However, Brazilian police say that is not true, saying instead the athletes vandalized a gas station bathroom and were involved with a conflict with armed security. What do you make of this, Scott?
Well, I can't imagine that anybody who has seen an interview with Ryan Lochte in the past would think that he would say something that's importune. I think that out of it, what we are seeing is actually a way, you know, the outrage of the African American athlete Gabby Douglas, who didn't have her hand on her heart, and the response that Ryan Lochte got initially, I think, is, you know, it's, again, sort of what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. So, I mean, it's funny that they, you know, did what they did and got busted, and we had the intrigue of someone being, two athletes being detained on the plane to answer questions, but I think that overall, it was unnecessary.
Yeah.
Wow, spoiler alert, it was unnecessary.
Yeah, it was unnecessary. Steve, we only have a minute. Your thoughts on the Ryan Lochte lie?
Buttheads being buttheads, how about that? I haven't really watched much of the Olympics, and so I think the whole Gabby Douglas controversy was stupid, given, you know, all you have to do is go to an athletic event and note that there's a lot of people who don't put their hands on their hearts for the national anthem, and not because they're intending to be disrespectful. So that was ridiculous. And I guess we know where those swimmers are going to be using their bonuses from winning medals, and it will be sending it back into the Brazilian economy in restitution for the idiot thing they did,
yeah,
allegedly.
Well, I hope that the thunderstorms do not happen during your Friday night football tonight, Steve.
Otherwise, I'll be announcing at midnight, possibly.
Thanks for joining us. And Scott Ross,
thank you, too.
Thank you.
Scott Ross, Executive Director of One Wisconsin Now, and Steve Prestigard, journalist, blogger at steveprestigard.com. Thank you to producers Bill Martins, Brianne Shasso, and Kai Brito. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.